Professor Norman Goodman. What is your... Are you chairman of sociology?
Distinguished teaching professor and chair of sociology.
Distinguished teaching professor and chair of sociology. All right, just a quick... Your name, department, rank, and position, we already have that.
Right.
What year did you come to Stony Brook?
1964.
How old were you at the time?
Hard to believe, but I was 30 years old.
Over 30? Is that right? From what institution and position did you come?
I was an assistant professor at Queen's College of CUNY.
I see. All right.
Yeah,
also in sociology?
Yes.
Who was primarily responsible for your coming to Stony Brook?
Mostly Kurt Lang, who was at Queen's College with me, and Ben Nelson, who was then the chair here in sociology.
I see. All right. And who interviewed you for the position here?
Ben Nelson, who was chair of sociology, Stan Ross, who was then dean, and you, Carl, who was chief executive officer.
Okay. All right. Why did you come? What factors were most important in your decision?
Well, there was a push factor and a pull factor. I was very unhappy. Kurt and I were very unhappy at Queen's College because it was essentially, at a time, a gerontocracy. It had a department of 23 members, 8 of whom had voting rights, including the two of us. It wasn't that we were shut out, but we felt that the department really didn't take into account the needs of new and growing developing professionals. So that was the push factor. It motivated us to look somewhere. Here, the pull factor was the development of a new institution, the chance to get on the ground floor and do something with it.
What was your understanding of the purposes behind the creation of Stony Brook? What was the vision being transformed into reality?
Well, when we came here, it looked to us as if the mandate had been to build a new and major comprehensive university, to be the kind of flagship of the state system. And a range of graduate programs leading on to the doctorate degree, and to become a major player in the academic scene.
Give your impressions of Stony Brook when you first came. What happens to people of leadership spirit?
Well, I gave you a copy of the article I wrote for Homer Neal's Farewell. It was printed in Academic News. And I talk about the beginning, there was a kind of Gemeinschaft community here, and that is a real community. The group was small enough so that faculty seemed to know one another, faculty crossed departmental divisional lines. There were no rigid separations. There was a lot of interchange between faculty and staff, and with faculty, staff, and students. My impression was that this was a nice, fractionated arguments and disputes, and I wrote a legacy before I came here. I've heard of President Lee. But whatever the arguments there were, it was an argument within a community, within a large family, so to speak, with people who seemed interested in building, a kind of pioneering spirit, building a new institution, and I liked it very much.
What events, what persons, what experiences stand out?
The three most important people who stood out in my mind for quite different reasons were Stan Ross, Sid Gelber, and Johnny Toll. Stan was a very dynamic dean, intent upon building the place, a kind of committed scholar, somebody who I thought understood what needed to be done, although we disagreed and argued on occasion. Gelber, who had a real intellectual, academic, and educational vision and philosophy of what a university should be, and an administrative style which I thought fit the times, that is, it was a relatively loose administrative style which drew upon the kind of community that Stony Brook was at that point.
Now, you're talking about Sidney when he was...
AVP, Academic Vice President.
Academic,
he was first
on down the line.
But he was first
chairman of philosophy.
Chairman of philosophy, and then he replaced Stan as unclear what it was. But he also, he continued, I thought, Stan's professional approach, but he had a broader vision, educational vision of philosophy than Stan had. And I thought that was very useful. Stan had a kind of narrow conception, which I think was useful to get things going, and a kind of dynamic push.
Right.
Sidney had the vision and got other people to move in that direction. And Johnny, whom, as I think you know, Carl, I had constant and severe disagreements with over the years, I thought, however, did a masterful job in doing what had to be done to get the physical plant built.
Yes.
And to get, at least initially, attracting some of the resources that Stony Brook needed. I thought later on, it became clear that he didn't get all the kinds of resources that he thought he got or that we thought we deserved. But I thought getting a physical plant up when the money was available was an important aspect. As I said, these were major events. I guess the key major event was the drug raid in 1967 or 68, which brought us not quite wanted national attention. And the aftermath of that, which was the three-day moratorium, where we closed classes down and took stock about what we were about. That again was Sydney's doing. And that, I think, helped us reflect on what we wanted to be as an institution. And so the drug raid, the three-day moratorium, and I think one of the aftermaths of that was the development of a residential college program, which brought faculty into the dormitories, aligned the faculty with students as in a joint enterprise, which integrated or attempted to integrate their intellectual and their social life, I thought was a major innovation on this campus.
Who was responsible for that?
Well, the idea originally came from a fellow who was no longer here, was only here for a short time, a mathematician named, political scientist named Sandy Lakoff, who had just come from Harvard, and he talked to Johnny Toll about that. And Johnny worked with Bentley Glass, who, I excluded Bentley, and I shouldn't, as important people, because Bentley gave us immediate intellectual recognition in the field of higher education that we sorely lacked before that. Bentley spoke to a few of us, including me, seven faculty originally who started the program.
Who were the others?
Dave Trask.
In history.
Yeah, I'm trying to think now. It's been so long.
Where did Larry DeBoer?
Larry came afterwards. Dave Trask, Ed County in art.
Yes.
I think Peter Dollard was involved in the beginning from engineering.
Engineering.
I'm sure he was. Peg Wheeler from anthropology.
Yeah.
That's all I can remember right now.
Anybody from English or humanities?
I don't. There must have been, but I honestly don't remember now. Yeah. Larry DeBoer came 2 years later to be the I actually, Dave Trask headed up the program initially. We called the Council of Faculty Masters, and Dave was the chair of that council for 2 years, and then I took over for 3 or 4 years. Larry was hired after my first year as head of the council to be the administrator of the program. And Larry and I worked very well together, him handling all the kind of administrative aspects, and me handling the academic and relationship aspects of the program. And that lasted to about 1972, when it was dissolved for a variety of reasons, which I'm not quite sure that we need to go into now. I was hired really to do sociology. I had just published a book, a couple of articles, and the institution was trying to build up, and the department was trying to build up, and I provided a brand of sociology, a sociological social psychology, that was not represented at the time. So that's why I was hired from the departmental point of view.
Okay. I think you've covered a lot of what expectations did you have when you came. Expectations worked out both personally and for the institution?
Well, I came here hoping to have a hand in helping to university, and I think that that's been true. I have played a role in that. And I think I was afforded that opportunity by the very nature of the institution when I came here. It was young, it was small, it was cohesive, and it was ambitious. And anybody who wanted to play a role was given the opportunity to do so. And I thought that was that was one of the reasons I came here, and I found that expectation was met. I was allowed to play a role. People who didn't want to didn't have to, but people were encouraged to. And I think I have shaped the role in that. That's been personally satisfying to me. And whether it's been useful to the institution, it's not easy for me to judge that. I think it has. Obviously, I wouldn't be doing it. But other people have to make that kind of judgment.
What kind of shaping do you think you've done?
I think a good deal of it was to make sure that the institution is well-rounded. That is, there was never a question from the beginning of the time here, particularly when Jerry Toll came, that this would be a major research institution, as well it should. That was its mandate. I think I was concerned that the educational process, particularly at the undergraduate level, would not be given sufficient attention. And I devoted a lot of my efforts to ensuring that undergraduate education became an important part of this institution's mission, that it got adequate attention, it got adequate resources. At the same time, it was not separated from the essential element that's true of all students here, and that is they grow and develop in very many different ways, not only intellectual. That is, to try to blend the intellectual and non-intellectual aspects of student life on campus. So the whole issue of undergraduate education, student life, is something where I focused my attention. And I was very much concerned with that. I guess the other thing is, as I think you know, I've been completely devoted to faculty governance. I think that no institution worth its salt can progress without the strong involvement of faculty, the cooperative relationship between faculty and administration. And I think governance is the vehicle for that. And I've done what I can do to try to first build up the quality of faculty governance and to assure as best as I can that it works smoothly with administration to affect what has to be done on the campus.
Can you carry it on a little further? Going through the periods of the different presidents, how have the faculty and the administration worked together? What was the relation when you first came?
When I first came, they really the group was so small that while there was a technical separation, there didn't seem to me to be a major separation. It just passed the period where the faculty had battled with President Lee. You may recall that?
That was back in 68.
Yes.
Back in Oyster Bay.
I came after that. I came in and you were the chief executive officer. I saw no major differences between the faculty administration. Partly, frankly, I was still young and I wasn't experienced with what was going on. I didn't see any major problems, and I just got involved with faculty governance. The introduction of Charlie Toll, I think, changed that dramatically. Not necessarily the first year, but subsequent to that. And now, obviously, this is my personal view, which other people have a different stance on. Jay and I always differed, not from the beginning, I would say, but shortly, I would say within the 2 years after he was here, on the nature of the campus and his educational vision, which I thought was rooted in the past, not the future. I thought he was looking backwards to build a great institution of the past, and I thought we ought to be looking forward to build a great institution of the future. And that is, I thought his view was more dramatic in style, and that is that you build it around great professors. And that if you bring great professors here and you bring top-notch students, then the educational process will take care of itself. I don't believe that. I don't believe that in terms of my own experience. I don't believe that as a professional social scientist. I believe that in any organization, you've got to give due account to the processes that relate people to one another and to the institution. Direct and deliberate attention to those processes. And here at the university, I felt that one had to devote time to considering what is the nature of the educational process, what is the nature of student life on the campus, what is the nature of the working conditions of faculty to facilitate their work, both research and teaching. And my differences with Johnny Toll was that I didn't believe he thought about it in those terms. I thought he considered it important to get the buildings up, and one of which I disagreed with. It was putting it all together that I disagreed with it. Getting the buildings faculty in bringing top notch students here. He said if you did that, everything else would take care of itself.
How well do you think, this is from your point of view, the chairman of the departments were doing their job of seeing that the faculty members were working together, performing their teaching functions well, and at the same time keeping alive themselves intellectually?
I think it varied considerably from department to department, but I think that those departments in which the chair worked to do as you say, that is to invigorate their faculty, to make commitments to the teaching process, at the same time keeping themselves, the faculty, and him or herself, the chair, intellectually alive, had to work against an administrative pressure to build a high-quality research institution. And so that the pressure from on top was not for quality education, although lip service was paid to it. And I think nobody ever said, don't pay attention to teaching. But I think the clear implication and emphasis that faculty drew from the administrative priorities through its funding policies, for example, through its programmatic developments, was that the key concern that they had was to build the research department and a research institution. And so department chairs who made an effort to include in that mandate the question of teaching, undergraduate and graduate, I think had to work against that kind of philosophy.
In other words, you don't feel you've got support from the president or the academic vice president?
I got more support from the academic vice president, I thought. That's what I mentioned before about that point. Sydney was the academic vice president. I think his academic and intellectual vision, I think, is something that permeated my views. And I thought gave us the intellectual support for those who did the job that we're talking about. I think drew it mainly from Sydney rather than from Johnny.
I see. What about Bentley? Bentley
at that time had two major interests. Bentley was really handling before Sydney took over, Bentley was there. He was really devoted to establishing us intellectually in the higher education community. And so he was quite often outside the campus, making very important connections for us in the intellectual community. And secondly, you recall at that time, he was deeply committed to building up the CED program.
Yes.
And that's where a lot of his energies went. It wasn't that he was disinterested in the undergraduate education, but he focused his efforts on those other two aspects of it.
Activities confined to the Stony Brook campus. You go outside either in your own discipline or with respect to Albany or locally here.
Well, if I call a question here, you're talking about up to 1971.
Roughly, yes.
Yeah, and largely during that period of time, that first 7 years, for example, when I've been on this campus, it was mainly devoted to Stony Brook. Subsequent to that, I got involved with faculty governance beyond this campus. I got involved with professional societies nationally. But in the period you're talking about, 64 to 71, for me, at least, it was mainly devoted to this campus. Although, in developing the residential college program, we did visit other campuses, make contact with other institutions to find out what they did there and so forth. So we tried not to limit our vision to this campus alone, but to use our experiences here and draw upon other places.
Were you at all involved in the planning of the student union?
Funny question, Carl. I was on the first faculty committee for the student union, which, by the way, I'll tell you the interesting side note about the name of that. And the first thing I said when I saw the plans, we were then a campus of 4,400 students. The first question I asked was, when are we building the next one? Because the plans at that point for the student union were already too small. And as you know, that's the building that was put up, and it's still too small. It was too small when it was put up, and it's certainly too small now.
You know, I've just seen Paul DeMars. I've interviewed Paul.
and Johnny Toll about the name of that building. Johnny wanted to call the campus center to make it clear that it wasn't just the students, all faculty and staff would have access to it as well. The students wanted to call the student union. And there was a big battle, almost came to a student strike. And I must say, somebody modestly, the solution was mine. And I convinced both sides to call it what its name is now, which is the Stony Brook Union.
Stony Brook Union.
Yes. And I convinced Johnny that the Stony Brook Union meant it wasn't a student union. And for the students, it was clear to them that everybody was going to call it the union anyway. And so they were both satisfied. But there was literally a battle which almost reached the proportions of a strike over a silly issue like that.
Fine, but looked for in hiring people was
shortly after I got here, maybe the first, probably second year, at the urging of some of us, there was an intramural program set up, which did not distinguish among faculty, staff, and students. We all played together. And it's interesting, we had a team which was composed of students, undergraduate and graduate, staff who worked in the kitchen, in the food service, and some distinguished scholars. We all played ball together. And I remember calling up one time, trying to make an arrangement for something for the physical education department, and speaking to one of the instructors there, who was still on the staff, whose attitude has changed somewhat now. And so I talked about setting this intramural up and giving us some facilities, and he said to me, why do you faculty want to play with those students? And I always was, I found it an incredible statement to make, that here was the perfect way of bringing those parts of the community, faculty, staff, and students together in ways which they could work together on a common goal, right. Or whatever it was,
outside the
classroom, which enhanced their relationship in the classroom, because I found that students I played ball with felt much freer to come to me when they had a problem. Our students tend not to come to faculty because it's very hard to cross that door and say, gee, teacher, I have a problem.
Okay.
But if they know you from playing whatever, whether it's any activity outside the campus, they can associate with it, they feel much more comfortable in doing so. That's one of the advantages of the residential college program as well.
Yeah.
Same kind of thing.
Right. As a carryover from high school, that the two sides of the desk and the faculty member is a little bit above and untouchable, so to speak.
Both feel you're not untouchable. I can show the bruises to prove that.
And you name individuals who did things that were important for the future development of the university as a whole, or some part of it.
I think, I think Stan Ross, as I said before, I think was important at the time he was here in getting movement on the faculty, getting the faculty to hiring the right faculty initially and moving the faculty toward having a conception of themselves which was positive. I thought Bentley was important for this campus because he gave us and linked us immediately into the intellectual community outside the campus.
I don't know who you got on there, so I know who they are.
Bentley we have on there, I must have gone to Stan Bentley, then to Sidney Gelber, who I think was absolutely essential in providing us with an intellectual and educational vision and philosophy for the campus that helped inform the academic and hiring decisions we had to make. And then Johnny Toll, for all my differences with him, which were legion, I thought was important in getting us the kind of physical facilities we needed. And at least initially, although later on he was less successful in getting us some of the budget we needed for developing growth. Max Dresden was somebody who played a key role because he exemplified to both the faculty and the students the fact that one could be a dedicated and committed campus citizen, an excellent teacher, and an internationally respected scholar. And I think we needed to have models of that. And I mentioned to you that I've seen him at a meeting of 2,000 students describing his excitement about his research and having students tell me that they never really understood until they saw Max how much faculty really loved what they were doing and that they could love their research and still be good and committed teachers. So that was very important. We also talked about the role of athletics, which I think is critical in a university campus, and again, appropriate to the kind of institution. So we're not Penn State and we're not Michigan. That's not the kind of athletics I'm talking about, but the kind of athletics which is an appropriate role for students to exercise their interests and talents and skills, which serve as a mechanism to